Krishna, everyone. So we'll continue with our subject today. Thank you for all your comments and your reflections and your questions. So I tried to take some of that just half an hour ago. I just reviewed everything. And I'll try to see if we can incorporate some of your beautiful contributions in our discussion today. So we continue the topic of being comfortable with the uncomfortable. We were writing recently a little biography of Janakinath Prabhu. And one of the final chapters of his biography was entitled The Final Journey. This was the account of how, many of you are aware, Janakinath Prabhu had cancer, and then at a certain point he was brought to the manor to stay in the annex because basically the occupational therapist said you have 3 months to live. So he came to the manor and we had many wonderful days there, hearing and chanting as he prepared for his final journey. And then 2 days before he ended up leaving this world, an opportunity arose to go to the hospital to try and get a blood transfusion, which would perhaps buy some more time to try some more therapies. And practically, although there was maybe a very small chance, Karuna Ras knows he was part of that whole Leela, Janakinath Prabhu's conviction was, if there's a chance, let's try it. You know, he was someone who lived in this world, who loved life, who loved devotional service, and so he was willing to try anything to continue, despite all the complexities that would be there, even if he did end up surviving. And so we call that final chapter the final journey. And I started that chapter with a quote by Christopher Columbus, who says, if you want to find out what's on the horizon, first you have to be willing to sail away from the shores. And so for me, this quote summed up Janakinath's final journey, because he was willing to sail away from the comfort, sail away from what he knew was secure and safe, and endeavor something more in devotional service. And in that final journey, he ended up leaving the world gloriously, destined for a place with Krishna somewhere. So Christopher Columbus said, if you want to find out what's on the horizon, you have to be willing to sail away from the shores. It's also significant because Prabhupada once told the story of Christopher Columbus. Prabhupada had also sailed away from India and had gone to America, spread Krishna consciousness everywhere. And after he had done it, some of his contemporaries were saying, it's not such a big deal. Anyone could have done it. Anyone could have spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So Prabhupada, he told the story of Christopher Columbus, who had sailed away from the shores to find out what was on the horizon and found America. And when he had returned from his voyages, then he met all his contemporaries, and they said exactly the same thing to him. They said, anyone could have done it. Anyone could have found America. Anyone could have gone sailing and done it. And then what did Christopher Columbus do? He said, bring an egg. And so Christopher Columbus had an egg. And he said, I want someone here to stand this egg on its head. How do you do that? Everyone was baffled. And then what did Christopher Columbus do? Pop. He just popped the top of the egg and he just stood it like that. And he said, there, done. Anyone could have done, but I have done. Anyone could have done, but I have done. Everyone had the opportunity to stand the egg on its head, but I did it. Everyone had the opportunity to sail away from the shores of what we know and find America, but I did it. Anyone of you, Prabhupada said, could have left America and embraced the discomfort, went, gone into the unknown. Any of you could have sailed away on that journey on the Jaladuta, and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. It didn't have to be me, because it was Mahaprabhu's prediction. It was just waiting for someone to become the instrument. Anyone could have done what I have done. So that was a very amazing story, because it shows that actually there's a divine plan going on. When you hear this topic, you think the uncomfortable, that sounds so unstable, that sounds so unpredictable. But what we have to know is that in the uncomfortable, if we're always walking with Krishna's plan with sincerity, Krishna is already there. Krishna is always there. Therefore, what did Krishna say to Arjun? Tasmatvam itishtalo yasho labhashva jitva shatrun bhongshva rajam samridham. He says, Arjun, I've already killed everyone on the battlefield. The outcome of this battle is already decided. All you have to do is become an instrument in my plan. So even when we hear about being uncomfortable, we think that's it's too unnerving. But behind it, we have to understand that Krishna's plan is there. So we're going to develop this a little bit more. Yesterday we talked about stages of comfort. Most people are just trying to find comfort in material life. Is that a bad thing? No, it's not a bad thing. You should have a steady job. You should have a steady social situation. You should have some security. But know that that comfort is just an illusion of comfort. That doesn't mean it's not valuable, but it's not the goal of life. Then we come to spiritual life, knowing that in material life, ultimately there's no happiness. And then we try to find a nice situation in a nice Krishna conscious life. We find our dharma. We find a way in which we can incorporate all our sadhana practices into all the different duties that we have. Is that a bad thing? Not at all. You have to do that. But know that that comfortable spiritual life is also not comfortable. It's an illusion of comfort. The only place you will ever find comfort, the only place you will ever find peace, is in Krishna consciousness. You're not going to find peace in a situation. You're not going to find comfort in a setup or an arrangement that you make. The only place. Nasti buddhira yuktasya na cha yuktasya bhavana na cha bhavayata shantir ashantasya kutah sukham. If you are ayukta, if you are not connected to Krishna, there is no shanti. There is no peace. There is no comfort. And so, when we're talking about embracing the uncomfortable, we're not asking you to be in a perennial state of discomfort in your life. The reason why we're asking you to do this is so that you can ultimately navigate yourself to the place where there is actual comfort. Hare Krishna. And therefore, we have to be ready and willing to embrace discomfort. Not because we're masochists, not because we're just trying to, experience pain for the sake of having pain, but because all of that pain has a key ingredient to take us to a deeper level of Krishna consciousness. So, we said that there are varieties of discomfort. There are voluntary things that you can do to say, in my life, I will do this because I want to go into the uncomfortable zone and find Krishna. There's a voluntary decision you can make. And if you don't make a voluntary decision to embrace the uncomfortable, then I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. But the material world is designed in such a way to deliver you an uncomfortable situation anyway. So some discomfort will come voluntarily because you made a decision. And many types of discomfort will come involuntarily because that's the nature of this world. Krishna says, Ma mupetya punarjanma dukhalaya mashashvatam. The world is rubber stamped. A temporary place which is full of misery. So all of that voluntary and involuntary discomfort is there not because Krishna wants you to experience pain, not because Krishna wants you to be insecure, not because Krishna wants you to put you in a situation where you're struggling, but because Krishna wants to bring you to ultimate comfort. Krishna wants to bring you to ultimate peace. Krishna wants you to bring you to ultimate realization of the Supreme Reality. What I want to do, just for one moment, is ask you, whoever's next to you, you can just for a few minutes, I want you to name someone, and this has to be someone you know, because we're interested not just in theology, but living theology. I want you to name someone you know in your life who took on a voluntary discomfort, and it brought them incredible growth and discovery of Krishna in their life. And I want you to name to the person next to you someone in your life who you saw went through an involuntary type of discomfort. Something came to them that was not in their will, that was organized by the movements of material nature, but they processed and digested that discomfort in such a way that it brought them great growth. Yeah, so we're just looking here for some examples of voluntary comfort, voluntary discomfort, and involuntary discomfort. Because what I want us to get is a picture of what does this embracing the uncomfortable look like in our life. Is that okay? So I'll just give you a few minutes. And please name specific people who you've seen this practically work in. How they learn to be comfortable with the uncomfortable, either voluntarily or involuntarily, and it brought them incredible growth and discovery in Krishna consciousness. Okay, I'll give you a few minutes to do that. So thank you very much. So we're kind of, the reason we're doing this brainstorming is because we want to try and make it a little bit real. We want to see whether this actually really works in the world. Maybe that will also give us the faith that it may work in my life. And not only that, it may give you some ideas as to what your next steps could be. Okay, so I'm just going to ask for some people to contribute. What are some voluntary, uncomfortable things that you've seen devotees do that has brought them great growth in their life? And if you can even name the person, that would be inspiring as well. Okay, yes, Shampriya Mataji. Yeah.
He took the leadership role of our president of our temple. And he just touched everybody. The growth was, I mean, he was already such a big, nice devotee, but I think it was very nice that he became the president of the temple. And the manor grew from, such a big community.
Yes, taking on leadership, like taking on responsibility for Prabhupada's movement. Yes, and Shri Prabhu was a real example of that. Once I was with him, I said, Shri Prabhu, Prabhupada said, we're going to have ISKCON in the spiritual world. And he looked at me and he goes, great, I hope I'm not the temple president there. So it's like with Shri Prabhu I saw, he took on so much responsibility, and with responsibility comes anxiety. With responsibility comes criticism. With responsibility comes so much complexity. On Sunday evenings, he would call me into his office after Gaura Aarti, and he would just tell me everything that was going on, all the madness. The madness of the ISKCON world, the madness of everything he had to deal with. And he'd just tell me, and we'd laugh. And then I remember once I was walking out the room, and he said, Sutapa, thanks for being my therapist. I said, but I didn't do anything, I just listened to you. He said, yeah, that's what therapists get paid for. So it was like that. He accepted so much level of responsibility. I was drawn to him because I saw that here was someone who became comfortable with being uncomfortable. Every day there was another sacrifice. Every day there was something to reach out to others. But there was a price. There was a price to pay for that association, I realized later. And the price that you pay if you want to have association with such a person is they start trying to bring you into the same zone. And so Shuddhiprabhu's name would appear on my phone. And there was a sense in which it was like, should I answer this call or not? This call probably involves some element of surrender. I don't know if I'm ready. And I admitted to him later, I said, Shuddhiprabhu, sometimes I didn't pick up your calls. I couldn't do it, you know, it was too much for me. So I saw in my whole life also how Shuddhiprabhu also pushed me. I didn't have so much capacity as him, but in whatever small way I could, he pushed me into speaking, into writing, into also taking on some responsibility. And it was uncomfortable. Many times I find myself in situations and I'm like, why, what am I doing here? And when I traced it all back, Shuddhi Dharma Prabhu. It always went back oftentimes to him. So yeah, someone who took on so much responsibility, someone who took on so much voluntary discomfort, he could perhaps be an emblem of this. Yes, thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
So, you know, Maharaj, you've taken the step to, you know, be a sannyasi. And just really based on what you were saying at your sannyas ceremony, you said that you're really stepping into the unknown. You know, something that Prabhupada did. So you mentioned that, you know, you don't know what you're going to do, where you're going to go. So that in itself is, you know, voluntary discomfort. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, even in the past few weeks, you've grown so much and, you know, I'm sure you're going to grow so much more in the next few decades. So
I'm not sure if it was voluntary or involuntary. I'm still trying to figure that one out. But
we can put that in the middle.
Put in the middle. I don't know. I'm very small. I'm trying to do something. Everyone is making a commitment. Yeah. You know, the other day someone... Yes, Anil Prabhu. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I was just going to comment and then I'll come to Kanakabji Prabhu. Someone once came to me the other day and said, taking sannyas, that's a big risk. Then I looked back and when I said, not taking sannyas, that's also a big risk. They said, getting married, that's a big risk. Not getting married, that's also a big risk. Actually, everything is a risk. We have this illusion that not doing something is the safe option, and doing something is a risk. Did you know that doing something is just as risky, or not doing something is just as risky as doing something? Like imagine you're in quicksand, and then you look forward and you think, I can get out there, but there's some wild animals, risky. You look right and you think, I could go there, but then there's some cliffs, risky. I could go back there, but there looks like it's a thunderstorm, kind of risky. I could go there, but there doesn't look like there's going to be any food. How will I survive? Risky. Okay, what to do? I'll take the safe option and just stay here. Well, my friend, you're in quicksand. So you may think you're taking the safe option. Everywhere there is risk. So everything's a risk. So, one person once said to me something which changed the way I look at life. He said, in any decision, don't always be nervous about what could go wrong. Start getting excited about what could go right. Don't let your decisions in life be guided by your fears and inhibitions. But start letting the decisions in your life be guided by your dreams and your desires. Which type of life do you want to lead? It's how we process. You see, when I'm coming in to give a talk, there's adrenaline going through naturally. Public speaking, one of the biggest fears in life. As that adrenaline is going through your body, if you're meditating on what's going to go wrong, Once you sit on this seat, you'll be a nervous wreck. But when that adrenaline is going, if you'll start thinking, what could go right? How could I contribute? How could I serve? How could I make a difference? How could I please Srila Prabhupada? You sit on this seat and you're excited. The amazing thing is, it's the same energy. It's exactly the same energy. But what is your mindset? So, yeah, I don't think I'm, you know, anything amazing. We're all taking a risk. We all have to take a risk. And even those people who aren't taking a risk are taking a risk. They're just doing it unconsciously, thinking they're taking the safe option. So risk. Spiritual life is risky business. It's all a risk. Anyway, these are some of my thoughts on this. Yes. Kanakavja Prabhu is, he was my bhakti leader, my guide, my shiksha guru. I owe so much to him. Anything that I achieved in my life, small achievements, he is one of the pillars of that.
Thank you. So there was a one devotee that really comes to my mind when we talk about discomforts. So back in the days, very early 2000s, when I was running Bhakta program at the manor, there was a very elderly devotee who joined us. So there was a group of kids, right, like teenagers or early 20s, new Bhaktas that joined. And there was this elderly devotee in his 60s who came from Isle of Wight, Bhakta Pita. Some of you might know him as Prayojana Prabhu. And I can say I don't think he's one of those really rare saints that you can see in your life and learn from. And he was kind of quite puzzling from the very start. You could see the level of, I knew a little bit about his background. I knew he didn't have easy life, and he literally left everything behind and joined a temple. And the level of service he would take, he was always insisting on washing the floors of the temple, washing the bathrooms, washing the dishes, and he would go above and beyond the service that we would normally do. And we had minimum reading time, and because he always wanted to chant extra, he would go to sleep really late, wake up really early, and he would be so tired that the only way for him to read and stay awake was to walk. So back in the day, you would always see him walking Manor Road up to the gate and back, reading the Bhagavad Gita, the only way to conquer sleep. And I don't know about you, but for me, coping with lack of sleep is probably the biggest austerity. And I tried preaching to him at the end that, look, this is not sustainable, you can't do this, it's fanatical, right, and all of this. And you could see he would just, you know, smile, nod, and he would just carry on. And whenever you think you can stop him, he would just do more service, he would just stay up late, wake up early. And I remember once, it was, I think it was summer 2001, it was similarly hot like now, and I couldn't sleep at night, and I woke up. And he was chanting, we were sleeping in the same room. And then I realized he's actually asleep, and he was chanting through his sleep. And that was very, very frequent, and he would be completely in deep sleep, and he would just chant. And then I remember I went to Shruti Dhamma Prabhu to ask him, okay, so how do I deal with this person? Like, what do I do? Because I'm responsible, and you want to take care of people. And then he just listened to me, and he said, oh, no, that's a saint. You don't interfere. Just serve him and let him carry on. And you could kind of really see the austerities that he was putting himself through at that old age. Right, and just carried on. And you could see, I mean, some of you have seen him through later years, his humility was just unparalleled. And whenever I think of austerities of modern day saints that are kind of unsung, he's one of the first people comes to my mind and really inspires me.
Special efforts in service, and also embracing difficult environments. Like, to live in a brahmacharya ashram is not easy. And to live in a brahmacharya ashram when you're so much older is so much more difficult. But He embraced that voluntary discomfort. I remember I once also said to him, I said, "Why, Prabhu, just take extra rest." And he just looked at me and he said, "I don't have time. My time's running out. My time's running out. I don't have time to rest." And it was that sense that, you know, no, I'm in this world for a short amount of time. I have to make it. Yeah, thank you for sharing. Someone else, what kind of voluntary discomforts? Yeah, is that Karina? Or? Yeah.
So, it's about Her Grace Mother Kulangna. She used to wake up at 1 o'clock, and you know, when she was ill, her blood pressure was going up, and she used to say, "Prabhu, I am Srila Prabhupada's dog. I don't feel like waking up, but as a dog would wake up and run, I run to the bathroom, take a shower, because I remember Srila Prabhupada that I'm his dog." So every day without fail, 1 o'clock, 12:30. She doesn't have to do it at the frail age of 85, 86. She said, "This is what it is, you know, I have to do it. I don't feel like, but I have to do it." So there are so many other pastimes, but I'll keep it short. Thank you.
Yeah. The strictness in regulation. I remember, I used to often come late from programs, I still do. And 12 p.m., 12:30 p.m., and there were two devotees who many, many times I would pass in the corridor. I'd be going, heading up to the sleeping bag, and they would be heading down to the bead bag. Sleeping bag, bead bag. And the two devotees were Jivapati Prabhu and Mother Kalangana. They were up. Jivapati Prabhu would not begin his pujari service until he did 16 rounds. And his pujari service was to wake the deities. And waking the deities means it's a 3:30 a.m. start. But he said, "I will not begin my service 16 rounds first, because Krishna accepts good consciousness. No rounds, no good consciousness." So he was strong on that. Thank you. Yes, someone else. Yes, at the back. I thought he was coming to do like a magic trick or something. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. So I think lots of the devotees here know my mantra from Ireland.
Oh yes, Parashuram Prabhu's sister.
His sister, the head pujari of Inishrath, and for over 30 years or 35 years, she's been the main person keeping the service to Radha Govinda going. And often there's hardly any pujaris there in the temple. Sometimes there's only her and one other, or her and two others. And many times devotees wanted to lower the standard of worship because it's been done in so many other temples, and there's no way she would hear of that. And she would say, "I'll do everything myself rather than have the standard lowered." And for year after year, she's been the main person, just hardly sleeping at all, many times, few hours sleep a night, exhausted a lot of the time, but cooking offerings, dressing the deities every day. And she would tell me that when she was a little girl, she had a teddy bear, and she didn't know anything about deities, of course, then they weren't brought up as devotees, but she would sew outfits for the teddy bear, and she would sew that teddy bear 7 outfits a year. And then when she became pujari, she's sewing 7 outfits a year for the deities. And I've been to India with her many times in Kartik, and she's just completely transcendental, unaffected by the austerities of the Holy Dham or illness. So even when she was sick, she'd still be up for Mangal Arati, up doing all of her rounds, and just nothing would stop her. Like, you would get special mercy being in India with her that you wouldn't get if you went with anybody else. Just a wonderful soul.
Thank you so much for sharing, yes. And I think here is a specific, like, making a sacrifice in a situation where there's a real need, you know, like, maybe you can just write that, Harsh, like, doing the needful and making a sacrifice where there's a need, or where you know, very few devotees in Inishrath and really just keeping it going. These are all the heroes and heroines of the movement. I mean, Mahamantra, Mataji, and then obviously when you see her, we all are familiar with Parashuram Prabhu, so when we see her, we see Parashuram Prabhu. And Parashuram Prabhu is also, Krishna, I could tell you many. Okay, I'll tell you one story of Parashuram. One day he came to me and he said, "You want to come with me to Amsterdam Rath Yatra?" So I said, "Yeah, sounds exciting." So he said, "Meet me at the back of the kitchen tomorrow at 6 o'clock. So I went to the back of the kitchen, and it was his Food for Life van, the old one. So then he pulled up there. So then I went to the front, and there was him, and there was two others. So that it was full in the front. So he said, "Yeah, you ready to come?" I said, "Yeah." So he goes, "Get in the back." I'm like, "No, can I sit in the front?" "Sit in the front, you know, I'm going to sit in the seat. I mean, we're going all the way to Amsterdam." He said, "No, just get in the back. It's okay. I put a seat there for you." So I said, "Okay." So I got in the back of the van. I opened the door, and there was a deck chair there. "Are you serious?" He's like, in these deck chairs, you think like this, you know. I'm like, he says, yeah, don't worry, it'll be okay, you know. So I'm in the back of this van, I'm driving away from the man, I'm in this Food for Life van, it's like prasadam stains everywhere, you know, like it's dark, you can't see anything, and I'm sitting in a deck chair. I'm going all the way to Amsterdam as well, by the way. Okay, I thought, okay, let's roll with it, you know. It's the Hare Krishna movement after all. Anyway, then we got across, we got to Dover, we got across to Calais, everything was fine. Then from Calais, we started driving to Amsterdam. Anyway, so you can imagine, Parashuram's driving the whole way. So you can imagine now it's like the middle of the night. So we're driving, anyway, police sirens. God. So then he pulls over. So he looks back and he goes, "Just stay there." I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm comfortable in this deck chair. Anyway, so then the policeman comes to the front of the... So he's shining a torch on all of them and he's kind of checking out. And then Parashuram, you know, the Irish charm and all of that. And then this police... And then he shines like this to the back. And then I'm like, you know... So he sees me in a deck chair, the policeman. And he looks at Parashuram, he goes, "Who's this guy?" He goes, "He's my friend." He goes, "I know he's your friend, but what's he doing in the back?" So the policeman looks at him and he says, "This is completely illegal. This is completely unsafe. This is completely illegal. This is, you know, not according to regulation. This guy's got to get out." So Parashuram looks back at me and he goes, "You got to get out." So he opens the back door and I come out. I have no idea, it's pitch black. I have no idea where we are. No idea, you know, nothing with me. So I go to the side of the road and then Parashuram goes, "Do you want the deck chair?" Okay, give me the deck chair. So then he gives me the deck chair. By this time the policeman's gone. And then he closes the van door and he goes, "Don't worry, I'll be back to pick you up." I said, "That's what Krishna said when he left Vrindavan." He goes, no, "You just wait here. I'll go to Amsterdam, I'll drop everything off, and then I'll come to pick you up again." So what to do? At that moment, you know, the words of my parents about the Hare Krishna movement, maybe they were right, you know? But anyway, here's the point of the story. Parashuram, he began at 6 o'clock. He dropped me off in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. or whatever it was. He drove another 3 hours to Amsterdam. He dropped off all the equipment. He came back another 3 hours to pick me up. He did come back, credit to him. I got in the van, this time in the front. We drove back another 3 hours to Amsterdam. As soon as he got there, he started cooking the feast. As soon as he finished the feast, the Rath Yatra began, and he was at the front with his ukulele. He did the whole procession. When the procession ended, we came back, we packed up everything, and he started and he drove all the way back to Amsterdam, back to Calais. And then someone took over. And I calculated it, and he must have done, it was over 24 hours, non-stop. And I was like, and what really impressed me about the devotees were how hardworking they were. I have to say, like, this is the one thing that convinced me about Krishna consciousness, when I saw that these people believe in something. And I thought, there must be something to this, otherwise why would people do this? So I think just that, yeah, incredible efforts in devotional service. Okay, a few more quick ones. Voluntary, anyone want to share anything?
I see that in my Guru Maharaj, His Holiness Jaya Pataka Maharaj, when he had his kidney and liver transplant and was unconscious for nearly over 7 days, He woke up saying, I don't know how he remembered it was Ekadashi, and he told the doctors, I'm not going to have anything but Ekadashi. And then what he did was, obviously he was 7 days behind on his rounds, he doubled the rounds within 7 days. He don't need to try and caught up, he doubled it. So just involuntary, and then he was already trying to give class. I was like, it's crazy. Like, you just recovered from 7 days of unconsciousness and you're still trying to give class. So just so much involuntary comfort.
Of course, if you want to get inspired, then you can just do a YouTube search. Never Give Up? Never Give Up, Jaya Pataka Swami. And there's a video, and it gives all the accounts of what he did after his stroke. How many classes, how many world tours. I remember after his stroke, he came to the manor, and to go from the temple, he was staying in the life membership room, to go from the manor temple room door to the life membership room took him 2.5 hours to walk up the stairs. And I was just thinking, what drives someone? You know, you could just say, okay, the sign has come, let's retire, Mayapur, anyway so many people can meet me there, I'll preach from there. Here was someone who after a stroke decided to go on a whole world tour. Comfortable in the uncomfortable, knowing that that is what will lead me, bring me face to face with Guru and Krishna. These are the inspiring stories of our movement. What drives, do we want to taste that? What drives someone to do such things? There must be something. There must be some magic there. There must be some rasa. There must be some taste. There must be something they're experiencing. Otherwise, why? This is the opportunity that we have. Okay, what types of involuntary discomfort come in our life? None? Yeah.
When Shredanand had to go to Dwarka, his wife, he was too embarrassed to just take a grain of rice and too embarrassed to offer that to the Lord because the Lord has everything. But his wife insisted, you know, that it doesn't matter. The whole point is doing it out of love. So don't feel, you know, uncomfortable approaching the Lord with so little, even though the Lord has everything. So he had to go through discomfort because Krishna was so dear to him. So he felt embarrassed to go there, give such little thing and borrow such a big thing in return. So he had to go through this discomfort. And then I'm not sure which one this one fits in, but Mirabai, we all know the story about how she got poisoned when she was doing, every day when she used to do Sankirtan, her in-laws, you know, tried poisoning her. So she never, you know, she drank it like it was water, and then, but she carried on. She never stopped doing Sankirtan every single day. So that's another.
So we can say pain caused by others or discomfort which comes from our social interactions or others. These can be used. This is an involuntary type of discomfort which comes that one can use if they're in the mindset and become comfortable with that and use it in order to process themselves to a higher level of realization. Other things? So many. So health challenges. Janaki Nath Prabhu, he got cancer in the colon, it went to the liver, then it went to the lungs. He had 5 major operations. He had 3 cycles of chemotherapy. At one time, he was self-administering 30 pills a day. And many, many nights alone in hospital. One time he rang me in the middle of the night from hospital. And he said, this place is like teaching me so many things. On one floor of the hospital, I just see death all around me. And on another floor of the hospital, there's the maternity ward and there's all these souls coming into the world. Souls coming into the world, souls leaving the world. And he said, I'm learning so much from the hospital. He just called me in the middle of the night to tell me that. This is quite interesting. Can you imagine what that feels like to be lonely, alone in a hospital, night after night, self-administering 30 pills a day? Who can digest all of this discomfort? Somehow or other, he used it all. He used it all of that discomfort, all of that uncomfortable situation that Krishna put him in to just perfect his life. Who can do that? Only when you learn the art of becoming comfortable with the uncomfortable. I was on Sankirtan after we had done the marathon. That's when he had had the pains. And I remember this day specifically, I was in Bedford. And I was doing Sankirtan. At this time he had gone in for tests. He called me. I remember I went into Sports Direct just because it was quieter and warmer. And then he said, they just told me I got cancer. And like, okay, like what do you say to someone, you know? So we had some conversation. You could see clearly he was displaced naturally, thinking about how his life is going. He was actually just concerned about what it would mean for his service because he was such an active person. But the amazing thing is, by the time I drove back to the manor and then I met him in the ashram, I went immediately first to see him and we sat down and it was incredible. Within 3 hours of when he had called me and learned the news and when I met him 3 hours later in the ashram and started speaking to him about it, in that period of 3 hours, he had already changed that state of mind which was complete shock. And he was already saying, it's okay, I'm going to do this, and then we'll work it out this way, and this opportunity is gone. And he was already thinking about opportunities. That's how much time it took him to turn something which was the most shocking news in your life to a piece of news in which you saw incredible opportunity and growth and potential and hope and inspiration for the future. And I realized, this is the art of becoming comfortable with the uncomfortable. Who is learning this art? If you learn this art, this is the art of life. This is the art of Krishna consciousness. So yes, Janaki Nath Prabhu's health is definitely a very good example. Any other things? Yeah. Sorry? Shruti Prabhu's health? What's the... Yes, the health again. Yes. Yes.
The sacrifice of our mothers, ladies, that they voluntarily want to have children, but the involuntary discomfort of many years of late nights, the kids hitting them back, disowning them when they're older, all of these things that they starts off with a dream of wanting to give love, but there's so much turmoil and sacrifice and headaches on the way. So I just wanted to mention that. I don't know if that is involuntary or voluntary, but
Yeah, there's so much. And I just, one of those points may be lack of reciprocation or lack of, you know, you do so much and you don't feel, maybe, but you keep going and you keep giving. Yes, thank you. What other involuntary discomforts come to in our life, come to us in our life? Anything else? Yeah.
I'm not sure where it fits, but I wanted to share what we were speaking about. I went to Dallas a few weeks ago and I met Nityananda Prabhu, who's the temple president, and he was just telling us his story. So his parents were the opposition in Fiji, so like Labour. And when Tamal Krishna Maharaj was there, they basically wanted the devotees out to the point where they were discussing just assassinating them. And he met Maharaj, and Maharaj just said to him, look, before you assassinate us, try this out for a month. And he said within a few weeks he went back to Maharaj and was just like, please make me your disciple. It's just an amazing story of associating with a pure devotee. And at the time he was telling me he was a businessman, multi-millionaire, just doing amazing material projects, and Maharaj just said, give this all up and run this temple. And he's been running it since, and it just really inspired me. So in one sense it was voluntary, but in the other involuntary, because he didn't see it coming. He just met this Maharaj, he didn't know who he was. A lot of the local Fiji people hated them, the devotees, and he was just turned by the experience he had.
Yeah, we hear many stories like this. Yeah. Now, thank you for sharing all these stories. Like other involuntary, we all go through involuntary challenges. There may be a change in your fortunes, for example. You know, you lose money or something, you know, something happens in the world by which your material situation is destabilized. There may be a challenge in a career. There may be an involuntary discomfort that comes from a relationship challenge or a relationship strain. You know, husband and wife are together, maybe sometimes it didn't work out, and that wasn't part of your plan. That wasn't part of how you saw your life going, but that came, and it's uncomfortable. And how are you now going to navigate that situation to become comfortable with that difficulty so that you can use it in such a way that you grow? So there are financial challenges, relationship challenges, career challenges, health challenges, so many involuntary things that will come in our life which we'll have to navigate and which we'll have to learn to become comfortable with. This is the art of life. And all of these things on the right teach you that even if you're looking for comfort in this world, even if you say like, no, I'm not ready to embrace the uncomfortable, it's going to come. It's an art that everyone has to learn. Because the world is designed in such a way so that we don't become comfortable here. I'm coming back to the same point. So, yes. So now what I'm going to do is I'm just going to say a few... Oh my God, it's 6:20. So when should I stop? In 10 minutes. Okay, I'm just going to summarize. When I asked you to put these things up, I kind of just composed it into 5 questions which I saw coming up repeatedly. And so what I'm going to try and do is just say some very quick things on those 5 questions which seem to come up a lot. And then I'm just going to open it up to see whether there are any further comments on this. So one of the first questions which seem to come up a lot is this one. Why can't we grow in comfort only? Do realizations and growth only come from discomfort? When people join the ashram, what we generally tell them to do is a mix of 3 types of services. Do something that you're inspired by, do something that is needed, and do something that is difficult. And why do we tell them to do these 3 things? Why do we not only tell them just do services that you're inspired by? Because each one of these 3 things give you different ingredients in your spiritual journey. When you do services that you're inspired by, you get strength. When you do services which are not necessarily inspired by, but which are needed, you get mercy. And when you do services which are difficult, it forces you to develop a closer dependence on Krishna in order to do that service. And so, why can't we grow in comfort only? It's not that Krishna, again, I keep repeating, it's not that Krishna wants you to be uncomfortable, but in that discomfort, there are key ingredients that you manifest in your life that contribute then to your spiritual success. In discomfort comes sacrifice. In discomfort comes effort. In discomfort comes a deepening of one's desires. In discomfort comes deep prayer. And all of these things are the things which then drive you to find Krishna. So if someone says, why can't we grow in comfort only? Well, then my answer to them would be, name me anything significant you did in your life that was done in complete comfort. Did you bring up a child in complete comfort? No. Did you develop a beautiful relationship with someone only in comfort? No. Did you rise to the heights of your career in complete comfort? No. Can I become Krishna conscious in complete comfort? No. Not because Krishna wants us to be uncomfortable, but because Krishna wants to give us the opportunity to manifest key ingredients which will drive our journey to another level. Here's something someone else said. In the Gajendra pastime, Srila Prabhupada encourages us to fight from a position of strength. How can we reconcile that with embracing the uncomfortable? What I'm saying here is not that you shouldn't have material security. What I'm saying here is not that you shouldn't be in your dharma. You should have material security. You should be in your dharma. But what? That's not the goal of life. And that's not going to bring you comfort. Everyone's familiar with the Gajendra pastime. Gajendra's in the water, he's fighting the crocodile is winning. Why is the crocodile winning? Because although Gajendra's stronger, Gajendra's in the water. Gajendra's an animal of the land. So if Gajendra's on the land, he'll easily be able to defeat the crocodile. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, everyone must place themselves in a position of strength. So imagine tomorrow if Gajendra was on the land and the crocodile attacked him. Is it just the fact that he's on the land that will give him victory? What does he have to then do on the land? Endeavor. He has to fight. He has to do something more. It's not that Gajendra is going to win just by being on the land. Oh, now I'm in my element, now I'm in my dharma, therefore I'm going to win the goal of life. No. It's a good basis, it's a good foundation, but it's not the goal of life. Dharma svanustita pumsham vishvakshena kathashuya notpadayed yadi ratim shrama eva hi kevalam. You can be perfectly in your dharma, but if you don't develop an attraction for Krishna, it's all a useless waste of time. Because you're still in the material world. So what I'm saying here is not contradicting what Prabhupada is saying. By all means have material security. By all means find a spiritual life in which you're able to fit everything in. But within that life, embrace discomfort in a way which is achievable and manageable and inspiring. And you will develop jewels in your spiritual life. That's what we're saying. What if I go into the uncomfortable and can't manage it? What if I don't have the strength? So someone here is wondering, like, failure is our biggest block sometimes. So we think, what if I go? But again, we can't live our life like this. It's like saying, what about if I go into the gym and I get an injury? I couldn't possibly go into the gym. I might get an injury. I might push myself too far. No. So then if you're worried about that, go into the gym and get a personal trainer. Get advice, get guidance. with the community of devotees, find a space, reflect on your own ability. You don't have to do something crazy. You don't have to do a kamikaze thing. But you can start taking one step out of your comfort zone to try and meet Krishna. And you know, when you take one step out of your comfort zone, you get the capacity to then take two steps. And when you take two steps, you get the capacity to take five steps. Begin the journey and do it in a way in which, you know, you're not going to harm yourself. Remember, there's comfort zone, there's crisis zone, but in the middle of that, there's creative zone. So with the help of the Vaishnavas, find the creative zone. Because there you will begin to experience the potentiality of what life can be. How do we get the courage and boldness to go into the uncomfortable? How do I overcome the fear of failure? I've kind of answered this, but again, this question came up a lot. You see, the thing is, we have to redefine success. Success is in the endeavor. Success is in the endeavor. Prabhupada went into the uncomfortable. He went into America. And what does Prabhupada write in his poem? Krishna, make me a success or failure as you wish. Now that's very interesting, because basically what Prabhupada's saying is that this endeavor is already successful. Now externally, my mission may be a success, my mission may be a failure, that's up to Krishna. But internally it is a success, because I've done it with sincerity for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. So if you go into an uncomfortable zone to try and do something and it doesn't work out, your success is not based on it working out. Your success is already there because you've tried. Vaisheshika Prabhu, he says in book distribution, just touch the pavement. When you go out on book distribution, it's just touching the pavement. Once you've touched the pavement and you're out there, in one sense you're already a success because the endeavor is there. Now how many books you distribute, that's up to Krishna. So there's no sense, there's no need to be worried about failure. It's already a success if you've done it with sincerity, because Krishna will reward it. How do we know what the next step into the uncomfortable is? So again, I've already mentioned this. Take guidance, have a community of devotees around you. But you know what? Most of the time we know what Krishna wants us to do. I was in Switzerland, Zurich, and then someone at the Sunday feast, at the end of the class, they said, but Krishna was speaking to Arjuna directly, telling him what to do. So it was easy for Arjuna, because Krishna was right there. But how do I know what Krishna wants me to do? Because Krishna is not appearing before me. Therefore it was easy for Arjuna, but it's not easy for me, because I don't know what's my next step. What does Krishna really want me to do? The fact of the matter is that in most things in life, we know what Krishna wants us to do. We know what discomfort Krishna wants us to accept. When the alarm goes off at 5 o'clock in the morning, you can't be like, Krishna, if you really want me to wake up, I'm ready. But just tell me. If you appear before me and if you tell me, you know, that this is really what you want, I'll be ready. But I'm not sure. I need a sign. I need to be sure that this is really your will. We know. We know what Krishna wants us to do. We know through the voice of the Vaishnavas what Krishna wants us to do. If we're deeply introspective, we know the next step we can make into the unknown. Maybe there may be a few situations where there's some confusion. Most of the time we know. But the question is, do we want to do it? And so these are some points we've discussed. And essentially, this is my proposition to you at the end of this little discussion, that if we make a shift in our life from seeking comfort, and we get in the mindset of seeking growth, and in order for growth to happen, being comfortable with the uncomfortable. That's what will create a really dynamic Krishna conscious life. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki. I think we're out of time, so we'll end there. Yeah, end there. Okay, thank you. I think we'll end there because we're out of time.